Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your encore. Do you want more of music, news, and criticism? I'm your host, John Caramonica. Some people just don't know when to quit, and some people quit perhaps too soon. I was thinking about this a lot in the last couple weeks. When we came in, you were listening to your boy, famed Kanye West collaborator, Baumgartner, and that was a song called Who Cares off of his new album, which is called Egypt Station. And I was thinking about that because Paul was on the cover of GQ. We talked about this last week on Popcast in our celebrity profile episode. I thought Paul was like very loose, but also here's a guy who like doesn't need to be making albums, doesn't need to be releasing, to be interviewed for the cover of any magazine. He could just happily or easily rest on his laurels for the rest of time and have a great life. But here he is still out here doing the work. And so that was on my mind. And then John Pareles, our chief pop critic, wrote a notebook about the farewell tours of Paul Simon and Joan Baez, two people who have said, enough. And I thought, well, let's have a conversation about who sticks around and why and who leaves and why. So JP is here. What's
up,
man?
I'm still here.
You're here. You're sticking around.
I'm sticking around.
Me, TBD. Depends. I feel different on different days. Let's start with McCartney. What's your vibe on Egypt Station? Does it feel like an essential McCartney project? Does it feel like it's up to snuff with his earlier work?
It's a real up and down album. It's got some duds. It's got some sweetness to it.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me actually of his first solo album, the one just called McCartney, of him just like hanging out in the studio. I'm going to knock some songs together. You know, that album he comes up with Maybe I'm Amazed, which this does not have a Maybe I'm Amazed on it. But they're kind of sweet. I mean, it's real sort of bifurcated album because some songs he's like, hey, baby, I'm after you. I'm Randy. I'm Frisky. And then other ones like the like Who Cares? He's like the kindly grandpa.
Yeah, Paul's real thirst emoji on this, and I was surprised because that's also kind of how he is in the GQ story, right? Like it's like, oh, loose. He's just out here being loose.
Well, you know, I noticed this with a lot of older performers, the way Leonard Cohen was when he was doing his tours in his 80s. Joan Baez, when I saw her at the Beacon the other night, they're relaxed. They've got nothing more to prove. They can just, you know, stand there, be themselves. They know their fans are with them. They're not being harshly judged. They can take their time. They're loose. It's a relaxation. You're not going to see them doing a frantic dance routine and timing themselves with the video.
Right.
And I don't know. I find it kind of refreshing in a way from the concert experience of the video era.
Mm.
It's a break. It's a human breath rhythm instead of a machine rhythm.
Do you think that that rhythm or that change in rhythm goes hand in hand with the impulse to stick around or not stick around? Like some people, maybe Paul McCartney's at a phase in his career where that is a viable and enjoyable way to do shows, but maybe at some point he'll just decide, I don't want to do, like, that's not for me anymore.
Well, his shows are really, actually, they're pretty tight arena spectacles.
Mm.
They've got big video going on. I assume they've got click tracks in their ears. So when he performs, he's very mechanized. But I suspect that his comfort zone, his happy place, is in the studio. Oh, let's pull out that guitar. Let's try this riff. Let's bang out a few chords on the piano. And, you know, whatever. Half a day later, he's got another song. Or who knows, when McCartney might be 10 minutes later.
Right.
I mean, I just think that his ease is making music. It just pours out of him. I mean, I think the difference between people who retire or cruise on the oldies or go and make new songs is how much pleasure they get out of it and how much pain they get out of it.
Well, that's okay. So to that point, because obviously you've interviewed so many people over the course of your career. And also, I think you probably interviewed more people nearer to the end of their career than I have. When you talk to those folks, is that what it comes down to? Is it about pleasure? Is that really the choice?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's not a lot of pressure. There's not a lot of financial.
Well, sometimes there's financial. Well, sometimes the Leonard Cohen, there was a financial.
There was a financial incentive.
Yeah, sure.
But near the end of his life, when he started like knocking out an album every year, it was like, I interviewed him. He said, I've got a deadline, death. You know, he felt his mortality upon him and he wanted to get out what he could get out. So there is that. I mean, McCartney is not in his 80s. He's in his mid 70s, as is Simon, as is Joan Baez. They're pretty spry.
Right.
I'm not worried about them. But, I mean, Joan Baez is still seeking out new songs. I mean, she did an Anthony and the Johnsons song at the Beacon. I mean, you know, she's still looking around. I interviewed Bruce Springsteen once, and, you know, he said, you know, what's not to like about being on stage and having thousands of people shout their love for you? I mean, I do think that that must be an addictive feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there must be some pheromones activated when you're standing on stage and people are just applauding, you know, on their feet for you.
But
these why would you give that up?
But also, these are people, we're not just talking about touring, we're talking about making new records. McCartney could easily tour off of catalog without Egypt Station. This doesn't have to exist.
No, but I think his place, I think he likes it. I think that's what he wants to do in the morning, is go up and play some tunes,
mm-hmm.
make up some new stuff. You do get a sense with McCartney in particular that there's just this youthful wonderment about music in whatever he does. I mean, even his sort of dud songs have a catchy tune, have a funny little guitar lick. There's all that ingenuity and playfulness in them. Even when I'm not thrilled with the songs, you can tell that there's a guy who really just likes playing his guitar and putting stuff together.
Speaking of duds, should we play the dud?
Let's play the dud.
We should. Let's. Okay, so there's a song on this album with, I think it's less of a dud than you do, but it's like, obviously, it's a L. So this is a song on this album called Fuh You, which we don't have to bleep because it's only the fuh. And it is written and I think produced by Ryan Tedder of One Republic, who is perhaps my least favorite pop music producer of the 21st century.
He's the pop doctor. Trying to crack your code. I could stay up half the night, but a ride.
Now, for Paul McCartney, this is a forward-looking song. For John Caramonica, this is a backward-looking song. But, you know, I understand. I mean, look, he's not going to go in the studio with Tay Keith, although I'd love to hear him go in the studio with Tay Keith. But McCartney, you know, he did sessions with Kanye, and, you know, in that song, he's buried somewhere in there. But why this? I feel like if you're going to take a step out of your comfort zone, this is maybe not the right step. That's how I feel.
I'm agreeing with you on this. This is like Frisky Grandpa. Please, no.
Yeah, let's not. Let's not. But at the same time, there was something perverse about it, I thought, where I was like,
well, that's the part you like.
Yeah, no, not perverse in terms of the subject matter, just perverse of the idea that Paul McCartney sat in a room and thought this was a good idea, and that a bunch of people then subsequently did not stop him from putting this song out.
And I think they're even promoting it.
Is it a single? Quote unquote single? Whatever that would be.
I think it's getting the push.
Oh my gosh. I guess if you go see Paul McCartney in concert at some point, perhaps he will sing Fuh You to you. So
but probably only on one tour, and then he will retire.
Yeah, but if he does that, please email us at popcast@nytimes.com and tell us how uncomfortable it is. So, okay, so Paul McCartney, they happen to be two Pauls we're touching on today. Paul McCartney's sticking around. Paul Simon.
Well, Simon has made it clear that he is not quitting. He is quitting touring.
Sure. It's a half quit.
It's a half quit.
It's a half quit. And in a way, he's giving up the addictive stuff, at least the stuff that we've talked about as being addictive, right? going out and being showered with praise night in, night out?
He did do a great show.
Tell me about the experience.
Well, I saw the show twice. I saw it when the tour began in Vancouver.
Right.
And I saw the grand finale in Queens at Flushing Meadows Corona Park.
Okay.
Where they don't usually do concerts, but mm-hmm. it's a big flat place, which right. is the best place for outdoor music.
Yep.
No echoes. And you could hear every little triangle hit
sure.
that had been planned meticulously by Paul Simon for the 14th bar of that particular song. But it was a 2.5 hour show.
Mm-hmm.
He did some dance steps in the Cajun number. And he has a 14-piece band. It's a chamber music sextet and a button accordion. And so he had sort of every facet of his music and played to perfection because he's a meticulous perfectionist.
Why is Paul Simon quitting touring?
I think touring's kind of probably the travel, et cetera, is probably kind of a drag after a while. The downtime, the stuck in the, even the, even if the bus is luxurious, I just think it's wearing to be on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very carefully said he's stopping touring. It won't stop him from playing an acoustically pristine hall. You know, he could play Carnegie Hall. He could play BAM. He could look at Springsteen. He could do Simon on Broadway for sure. like months on end.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, there was that Brooklyn Academy Music series where he did an album a night that seemed very comfortable. And it was great to hear. It was also meticulous with lots and lots of musicians. So
he could do kind of a version of what Billy Joel is doing or yeah, has been doing. The I kind of like the garden shows.
Yeah, he can do a garden shows.
Yeah. So he could do a version of that.
He could. And he's also made clear that he's not stopping writing songs. But I mean, unlike McCartney, who they seem to pour out of, I mean, Simon is meticulous and painstaking and things take a long time to be made. I don't think it's as facile as McCartney is.
Sure.
But he's still doing good stuff. I mean, one of the things that I'm sure much of the tour audience did not know is this song Wristband, which we should play, which is
okay,
which got people on their feet because it's got a great bass riff with, of course, flamenco hand clapping on top because it's Paul Simon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about class warfare. It's about the entitled versus the unentitled, recorded in 2016 before the election. It's a great song. It's catchy. It's smart. He's still thinking. And I don't want him to go away.
I stepped outside the backstage door to breathe some nicotine. And maybe check my mailbox, see if I can read the screen. Then I heard a click, the stage door lock. I knew just what that meant. I'm gonna have to walk around the block if I wanna get in. A wristband, my man, you got to have a wristband. If you don't have a wristband, my man, you don't get through the door.
Can we talk about generational stuff? Because I feel like my generation, and certainly the genre that I grew up in, which is hip hop, has not yet fully contended with old age. It's just really contending with middle age, right?
Right.
It's not fully contended with old age. And I wonder if you can talk generationally about learning to accept that your youth icons or youthful idols would become adults and would become older adults, and accepting that kind of emotionally, but then also creatively.
Well, I think it's still kind of resented that the Rolling Stones grew up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that music is attached, I think maybe even physiologically, to our youth.
Yeah.
The stuff that hits us in our teens and early 20s is our music. And you know, I kind of pity the people who are stuck with what they are stuck with now.
Oh!
But, in a general sense, I don't know. I mean, people go to the Rolling Stones concert to hear Satisfaction. They don't go to hear whatever song Mick and Keith have squeezed out between feuds.
Right.
You know, that's the bathroom break.
Right.
I mean, people are going to Eagles concerts to hear the songs they heard in the 70s.
Sure.
People aren't going to Eagles concerts, not that they're right. writing any new songs. Right. But they're selling out stadiums.
Right. But those people are going to access an old feeling.
But I think there's a difference between a band like the Eagles, you know, continuing after the death of one of their principals and playing the old songs again. They're trading in brand loyalty and nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Simon really doesn't want to trade in nostalgia.
Right.
He had to sort of convince himself to do the Graceland anniversary tour because he did not want to be stuck looking back. He stuck new songs that he knew no one wanted to hear in the middle of this grand finale tour. Mm-hmm. He accepted the sort of sagging of interest and
right,
looking
the
at
energy.
The cell phones
yeah.
part of the concert because he wanted people to hear those songs.
Do you think that's what it is? Do you think that's the thing that separates those who walk away versus those who stick around is those who stick around are sort of, in a sense, still tinkering, not just with like new songs or new ideas, but also with their own conception of their artistry.
I think that's exactly it.
Mm.
I think that they're still curious.
Unless you're the Eagles, in which case you're deeply incurious.
So it seems.
So I'm just, you know, let's play some Eagles. Let's play
from the Hell Freezes Over tour. You got to remember, they did a farewell tour.
True story. When the Dixie Chicks, you remember when the Dixie Chicks opened for the Eagles in like 08 or 09?
Right.
I went to that tour strictly to review. I think you and I spoke about it. I went only to review the Dixie Chicks because to me, it was more meaningful as a Dixie Chicks reunion than as an Eagles tour. And I remember, I feel like it was one of the first conversations that you and I had where I was like, I don't know if we are agreeing on this because I think you were like, you should review the whole show. And I was like, I don't want to watch the Eagles.
You're just too cool for school.
I'm sorry. I just, anyway, I paid the price for that because I left. I took mass trans out there. It was in Giant Stadium. And there were no buses because I left in the middle of the show.
Because the concert wasn't over.
There was no, exactly.
Get back to your job, dude.
Shouts to Dina and Jody, though, who I met in the parking lot. And we took a cab to the train station and all became friends. So, you know, not a total L. Anyway, the Eagles. Yeah. Pedro, you're not playing the Eagles? Okay, Pedro's refusing to play the Eagles.
Take it easy.
But yes, it's that tinkering impulse, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, Simon has redone, you know, a dozen of his songs for a new album. Not a dozen, maybe 10. For a new album with like completely new arrangements, turning them inside out. He's still, how do I make these work? He's changing lyrics. He's changing feels. It's a musician's project. I mean, you do get the feeling that the people who continue to at least try to make vital albums are still interested in the process. I mean, songwriting is such a weird, mysterious process anyway, right? I mean, what do you do with that blank page or that, you know, that instrument sitting in front of you? And you have to stay curious to do it. You can't really rewrite a song, though people have tried.
Yes.
But let's talk about the hip-hop generation, though, where all you guys are saying,
oh my gosh,
you know, 5-year career and I'm done.
Yeah. So I think this sort of started with, I can't say with 100% certainty, but I feel pretty certain it started with Jay-Z. There was a point when he was, when the Black album came out and he's like, there's a song where he's like, you know, I dropped the Black album and then I back out. I think he had an understanding at that time. And this is, of course, you know, what are we talking about? 10 years ago, 12, 14 years ago, there was an understanding that hip hop was not a viable pursuit for a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old. Basically, whatever covenant with the devil Mick and Keith have struck, no one in hip-hop has struck that, or at least not then. But that's changed because hip-hop became bigger and more central to the pop music discourse, and more people rely on it financially, and Jay-Z has big tour obligations to Live Nation. So all of a sudden, Jay's going to be on the road for a really long time, whether with his wife or alone. That's, he'll be performing, I would imagine, into his 50s. And I think other figures, Kanye probably, will also be performing into their 50s. And that's not something that I think, you know, I was asking the generational question before. It's not something I think my generation has yet reckoned with. Because, like, Run DMC is not currently doing like an arena tour.
Well, they're not able to fill an arena.
Right. But there isn't a figure of that generation that can still sell at that level in a live context and also is still tinkering and putting out new music. So that's not something that the hip hop generation has had to reckon with yet.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it's also a baby boomer thing where we saw our parents have long careers. People could stay in jobs and keep doing them.
Oh, wow.
A work ethic.
A salary man.
A salary man ethic.
Oh, my God.
And so it
was... And the
it
was gig economy just washed.
Yeah. The gig economy has come to rock.
Oh, my
and
God.
Pop and hip hop.
Do you think that's it? Do you think that people accepted the fact that Mick and Keith and whoever are just plugging away into their 70s because that's how they understand the nature of American work, even though the Rolling Stones are obviously British? But do you think that it's like almost like an American work ethic that people have come to accept?
Well, also they're these guys also grew up on the Blues Guys.
Mm.
And the Blues Guys didn't have health insurance.
And they don't get interesting until they're 60 or 70.
I mean, they didn't have pensions. They didn't have health insurance. They didn't have anything. They were out on the road. I mean, and those were their role models.
Mm-hmm.
So someone like Bonnie Raitt, who's still great live. I mean, I still like seeing the Rolling Stones. These people who were steeped in the blues, they thought you can do it for a long time. They thought there's longevity. The folkies and the Blues Guys, they didn't see themselves as pop flash in the pans.
And that's interesting. You talk about folk and blues, and I assume we can throw country in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly, you think of the country music tradition, age is not really a liability, at least not. I mean, up until maybe like 10 years ago, but age is not really a liability in the country music tradition, you know, and certainly like you have Willie Nelson out here doing 100 or 200 dates a year and still toying with his own songs.
Yeah. Well, and still putting out how many albums?
My God, Willie.
It's like one every couple of months.
It's really mind blowing. It's really, he's like a SoundCloud rapper. He really is. He's just dropping arbitrary records.
Me up and smoke me when I die. And if anyone don't like it, just look them in the eye. I didn't come here and I ain't leaving, so don't sit around and cry. Just roll me up and smoke me when I die. Now you won't see no sad and teary eye when I get my wings and it's my time to fly. Call my friends and tell them there's a party, come on by. Now just roll me up and smoke me when I die. Roll me up and smoke me.
I saw Willie a few years ago, and I just remember being just spry.
Yeah,
just spry physically, but also just alert, alive in the moment, you know?
Yeah, he's an improviser.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's another thing that keeps people alive is when it doesn't become a recitation. You know, when it doesn't become a routine.
I'm now reminded, and this is maybe a little off track of where I thought we were going to go, but I'm reminded of a couple of shows that I've had to review back when we still reviewed live shows. I'm reminded of a couple of late career live shows that I reviewed that I thought were just heartrending and awful. I'm thinking Loretta Lynn, who I reviewed, and this is maybe even before the Jack White record, but I reviewed her at maybe like the NJ Pack. And man, it was like she actually said to her band, she was forgetting words and said to her band, like, play something we know. You know, it was very...
That's hard.
It was dark. And then Glenn Campbell, obviously.
That's hard.
Yeah, that was, you know, a year before he passed, I think. And it was just incredibly challenging. I couldn't kind of figure out what the covenant with the audience was at that point. Because you know you're seeing the person in decay, or if you don't know, you certainly figure it out quickly. What's the trade-off there? I found it really hard as a critic, but also just as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. It's not the performance you necessarily wanted to come home with.
Yeah.
Have you had similar experiences?
I saw Frank Sinatra in his declining years and forgetting the words to New York, New York, if I remember. And that's hard to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can see the musicality struggling with the instrument, and it's hard to watch. On the other hand, I'd never seen Frank Sinatra. I knew I'd never see him again. So there is that privilege of being there in the room with Frank Sinatra.
Right.
The room being an arena. But it is hard to watch. You don't want to have that be your last memory.
Right.
I do think nostalgia paints over what you're seeing sometimes.
Mm.
Nostalgia is the auto-tune
of, oh wow. No, that's a good point.
Of concert
you're seeing
going.
In a way you're seeing what you want to see.
Yeah, you're seeing what you remember from the millions of times you played it at home.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting point. I think probably as critics we bring slightly different bearings to moments like that. But I guess maybe as just a paying fan, maybe it would feel differently.
Of course you want to see somebody in their total prime. But, you know, arguably Leonard Cohen was in his prime in his 80s.
Yeah, sure.
He was good when he was young, too, but he stayed in his prime. He, even when he was a kid, his songs were like mortality and God-haunted.
Yeah.
So he was ready to be an old man. Madonna is not going to be so ready to be an old woman.
No. No, but I wonder, do you think Madonna will tour into her 70s?
I actually asked her once, and she said, you know, Ella Fitzgerald did. And I said quietly to myself, Ella Fitzgerald kind of had a stronger voice.
Oh!
But I did not bring that up. but she might. I mean, if her tour depends on dancing as much as it does, it'll be interesting to see how she adapts.
To circle back to something you were saying earlier, or that you brought up earlier about kind of a younger generation and their relationship to retiring. So there is this sort of motif in hip hop of like, I'm going to do 3 albums and I'm out. I feel like you even see this with like 23-year-old rappers now, where they're just like, I'm done. I'm dropping this 5-part series and then I'm done with the game. And I think it's like sort of a hubristic thing for a young man to say who's made, you know, making millions of dollars in like a very compressed time period and just be like, that's it. I'm going to earn TK million dollars, 10, 20, 30, and then retire somewhere. But also, it's interesting because they don't understand their career as like a longevity play.
Right.
Do you think that that's how rock stars were in the 60s and 70s as well? They were just like, we're going to be done by the time we're 35. Or do you think they were like, nah, we're in it?
I think in the early days of rock, no one expected it to last.
Right.
I mean, and they were being managed by people who were thinking, you know, teen idol, boy band, you got 3 years, you're done.
Right.
There was no sense that you would keep doing it for pop, for that end of it. For the folk and blues rooted people, there was a sense that it was the lifelong quest.
You know, lifelong quest, because also like it was sort of like this, you're part of this continuum.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at Pete Seeger too. I mean, you could look at older performers who had kept doing it.
Mm-hmm.
There were mentors. I do think that once you get into it and you're getting that addictive pheromone rush from the audience, and I'm sure the lifestyle isn't so bad, you're going to say, well, those 3 albums were really 1 album, and I'm going to make another 3 albums.
Right.
You know, those were all one piece of work. I was just kidding about the timeline.
Yes, although that's how it is with, like, Gunna or Young Thug now. It's like that's, in a weird way, I sometimes don't feel like I'm reviewing albums. I'm reviewing, like, eras or, you know, like, moments.
Yeah, stretches.
Yeah, that's how it feels.
Well, you know, another career comparison might be sports.
Mm.
I mean, how long can you play pro basketball?
Right.
How long can you play pro football?
Mm-hmm.
You got to make your money and be done.
But you could play golf. Play golf for a very long time.
It's true.
Shouts out to all my golfing buddies. Not that I golf, but I do have buddies who golf. So actually, let's talk about something that feels like maybe kind of like a purgatory state somewhere in between retired and not retired. And that is Las Vegas. I know in the last few years, I have flown out to Vegas on a few occasions to review the opening nights of some residencies. I did Shania, and then I did Mariah, very infamously to some people. So that's like a place where I think a lot of people have started to go, certainly of a younger generation. It's not quite it's not the Rat Pack anymore. It's a very different energy. But it is this kind of nebulous, like, quasi-retirement. And I wonder if you can talk about, like, Las Vegas as, like, this trapped-in-amber moment, liminal phase.
Liminal phase. I mean, it's an oldies review, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the good side of it is no travel.
Right.
No sound check. All of the things that touring musicians get really tired of. You know, fine, I go to the office at 8 p.m. and put on my costume and I'm done by whatever, 11.
Right. Oh, Britney too. I totally forgot about Britney. Yeah.
You can't forget Britney.
No, you can't.
I mean, there is that advantage just as a practical matter. Also, Vegas, you can do all of the razzle-dazzle they're set up for production.
Right.
It's not like you're a poet in a one-man band.
Right, and it's a way to make pop stars still feel like pop stars, especially when they maybe don't have the touring draw that they used to have going around the country, right?
Or they don't have the new hits.
Well, they definitely don't know. I mean, I remember the Mariah tour, like the Mariah Vegas review was literally like the number ones. It's like just...
It's creative.
Yeah, it's just a brutal assault of hits, one after the next. I love Mariah. I don't want to get any emails about Mariah. I have a very soft spot in my heart for Mariah Carey, but that was a challenging night. But it's interesting because those are people who I think maybe in a slightly different era or economic moment would have quasi-retired, perhaps, but it have found this kind of like soft landing place.
Well, do you come back after your Vegas residency and put out a Bafo new album? I mean, is Shania Twain going to?
She did. She put, well, I don't know if it was Bafo, yeah, but she did put one out. And Mariah, I guess, is still releasing music.
Mariah's still working.
Yes, but could Mariah still sell out an arena tour around the country? I'm not 100% sure.
I actually think she could.
You think she could?
Yeah. People want to see what she does.
Yeah.
I mean, people want that live experience.
Wait, did you go to the Mariah Lionel Richie tour? I missed it. I was so sad to miss it.
No, sorry.
What a magical night that must have been. I want to, if anybody listening went to the Mariah Lionel Richie tour, please email me and tell me how it was.
but then there's the farewell tour that is kind of extended. I mean, Elton John announced his farewell tour and it's going to go for 3 years.
Yeah. That doesn't really feel like a farewell.
Which is just a little shorter than the Cher tour that was a farewell tour. I was looking for longest farewell tour, and Cher seemed to have like a dozen dates on him. So we'll have to see.
And the Elton farewell tour is ongoing.
Yeah. it just started.
Oh, so it's going to go for 3 more years.
Yeah. It started in September.
What do you think the point of that is?
To play to everybody who wants to see him for one last time.
But don't you think it's ego gratification as well? Ego stroking?
I have no comment. but you know,
I think it's ego gratification. I can comment.
Tina Turner, who I never saw do a bad concert, she played a 50th anniversary tour, 2008, 2009, and she stopped. That's it. I don't think she announced it was a farewell. I don't think
she just bounced.
She announced it was her 50th anniversary and then done.
She dropped the Black Album and then she backed out. She did what Jay-Z said he was going to do.
So it can be done.
But she also lives like a glamorous life in like Switzerland, right?
I hope so.
Who among us wouldn't do a farewell tour?
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, apparently so. Apparently so. Should we go out with a rousing Tina Turner song?
Definitely.
What's love got to do with it? It's physical. Must try to ignore that it means more than that. Oh, what's love got to do with it? That's our show. Thanks to my guest, John Perales.
Good to be here.
A man who knows no quit. Admirable and something that everyone should aspire to. Know no quit like JP. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your thoughts on who should quit, who should retire. I'm down to actually take a poll of who should retire at podcastnytimes.com, and subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your audio, which would be, I don't know, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, etc., etc. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week. But whatever the reason, you do